the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. I am in the studio by my lonesome this week to do this week's roundtable. Obviously, a lot of communication coming down last week, heading straight into Labor Day. I'm sure I blazed you all away. But just let me give you a heads up for this week's show, and then we'll launch into that. We are going to answer a question. Another member of our counseling staff, Joanne Condi, is going to come in and answer a question from a girl who is dating a guy, planning to get married, and they both want kids. However, she wants to adopt and he wants to have biological kids. And her reason for not having biological kids is pretty awesome. She's just terrified of needles, quite frankly. So can God work in the midst of that? Who knows? So Joanne's going to weigh in on that. Really fascinating question. So and then for our culture segment, you know that last fall I went to the Catalyst Conference in Atlanta. Well, I had the chance here in our studios to interview two of the leaders of Catalyst, Ken and Brad, and we're going to go ahead and air that interview this week as I'm looking forward to attending Catalyst in October again. So great insight from these guys as to what the Catalyst movement is, why it's important, what their vision is for young adults and young adults in leadership specifically. So you'll definitely want to catch that. So anyway, this week's roundtable is not round because it's basically me just sitting here by myself and no one else is at the table with me, which is unfortunate, but we'll go back to a regular, probably a more regular schedule and look next week. But most of you, I hope, either read my e-newsletter last week or my blog post titled Moving Ahead, where I talked about the changes at Boundless and kind of where we are going into the future. And I just wanted to recap some of that here, as well as just share a little bit of my heart for Boundless and where I feel we have an opportunity to grow and kind of move in the coming months and years, hopefully. So anyway, I wrote this blog post and then you saw Steve's post, I'm sure, and Ted's post. So we're all just like, you know, kind of dumping on you guys. I think it's interesting because I don't think I've even really shared a lot on the show in the past, maybe just bits and pieces, but really how I came to Boundless. And I think it was probably almost 4 years ago now that Steve and Candace and Mott, who were friends before my involvement with Boundless, invited me to be part of a seminar that they were kind of testing with this guy named Scott Croft from Capitol Hill Baptist Church out in Washington, D.C. And those of you who read the webzine and who have read a lot of those articles, and specifically his biblical dating series, know what's coming. They decided to host this seminar and basically kind of test the waters as far as what is a perspective on biblical dating and what could he share related to that. So I showed up. I decided to come. I thought I would help my friends out with what they were trying to do. And I invited some of my friends as well. And the funny thing is, I sat in that seminar and realized during the course of it that obviously I did not have a biblical view of marriage or getting to marriage because I was completely blazed away. I apparently grew up with a relatively benign attitude towards men and marriage and everything in between, and thought, you know, that I had a pretty healthy view of it in general, but definitely, as I've said before on the show, was just kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever, if it happens, it happens and stuff. And then he started talking about how, no, actually it's biblical, and actually it's the default for most people, and actually it's something to be pursued, and it's something to be honored. And all of a sudden I realized, wow, it hadn't really been a priority in my life in any sense of the word. And I think most of my friends kind of felt that way as well. So that was pretty interesting when we discussed it afterwards. So that was just, I kind of sat there and I was like, you know, kind of alternating between being amazed and being offended and being, you know, like, just what in the world is going on, and why have I not heard this before? And it was just very interesting. So it was about a year later that Mott approached me about a podcast that he was hoping that Boundless would get off the ground. And he said, hey, you know, was wondering if you'd like to try, you know, just take a stab at being the host of it, or just, you know, get on the mic and see what you can talk about. And so I did. And I guess, you know, it was something I'd never done before. I'd obviously been interviewed in my role in PR and had been on shows before as the subject of an interview. And then I was in journalism prior to coming to Focus and had done print stuff. But I'd never really conducted on-air interviews before, or ever dealt with, you know, booking people and researching and prepping and kind of getting into all of that. But I decided to give it a shot. And as you all know, the rest is history. I apparently started talking and never really shut up. So that's kind of how that went down. Then fast forward to this summer. You all know I was in Europe for most of July, and I came back and knew ahead of time somewhat of the transitions coming up at Focus. And when I came back from my trip, really got a fuller picture of that. Obviously, because of my role in PR, I had to know what was coming down the pike. But anyway, got the scoop as far as the potential to become involved in Boundless and leave what was an 11-year gig on the PR and media team here at Focus, which I had loved and felt kind of like that was my world. And then really just had this opportunity presented to me. And you know, I shared in the blog much of the detail of how that came down and just the budget situation and what had to be done. But in the midst of all that, we were assured that Boundless was not going to go away. And they said, you know, would you like to move over, Lisa, transition and be a full-time part of Boundless? And I had been feeling like and praying about this actually for months in just a weird context, not in a sense of ever, you know, coming on full time immediately or anything, but it was just weird how God had really put on my heart that this was something I get very passionate about and how could I become more involved. And it was interesting because about 4 days after that meeting or series of meetings that I had, I actually met with Candace and we just talked about what was before us. And we both agreed that for something this dramatic to happen and something that affected all of us, as you now know, on the team and how that affected each of us, we just both agreed that God has to be in it for something this tumultuous or this extreme or however you want to describe it. I mean, I don't want to make it sound ridiculous or negative or anything, but we were just like, this is something that we wouldn't have dreamed up on our own. And so God must be in it. And so we're looking forward for all of us, for each of our ventures as we move forward and what God's going to do in our lives as individuals and obviously in the ministry of Boundless and what Steve and Candace are going to do and what the other guys are going to be doing. And that's where we're really going from here. So I just want to assure you all that we are continuing, as I said in my post, we're going to post content, we're going to have articles, we're going to have blog posts, we're going to have podcasts. But I really am passionate about finding new ways to grow our audience. You know, one thing I've been amazed by as I have gone around and traveled and talked to young adults is how many young adults in the church literally can't articulate biblical worldview in a number of areas. They cannot articulate a biblical view of marriage. And really many of them, it's interesting, even in ones that I've talked to who are in leadership, who are in churches, in small groups, who are sleeping around, living together, not going to church. You know, I'm like, these are people in their 20s and sometimes 30s. And I'm like, really, what's going on with our generation, folks? And so, it's just really interesting to me how when I talk to folks, they're like, wow, I don't know anything about Boundless or I don't know what you're talking about. Or I hand them a guy's or a girl's guide and they're like, what is this? And just all like, you know, crazy, like looking at it like, what? Like it's some foreign language. So I really think that there are so many and this is, you know, hats off to Steve and Candace and Mott and Ted and the team who have, as I said in what I wrote, built the foundation of what Boundless is today. I mean, to have that kind of archive of articles and the kind of interaction that has been had on the blog and just the DTR assessment and the different assessments and the different the guys and girls guides, to have that kind of content and that kind of those kind of resources on the table and under our belts is amazing. It's 12 years of that, everyone, and all the Steve, God bless him, all the studies and all the different research that has been done on behalf of young adults and on behalf of marriage. It's just amazing. And in the opportunity that I've had to read it and study it, it just makes me say more and more people need to know what this is and they need to know about Boundless. And so that's where I really want to go from here. I want to take all this content that we have, continue to create it as we can. And we're looking, you know, with a limited budget, but we want to do what we can. But I want to just open all of that up to a new generation of young adults and to thousands, and as I said, hundreds of thousands, hopefully, of young adults in the coming year and beyond. So that's kind of where I am in the midst of all this. Very excited. I've got a couple of nieces who are now in college. I can't even believe it. So they're like, you know, hopefully going to consume Boundless as well. So I'm like, whoa, it's like, you know, them and their aunt, you know, both reading Boundless. So anyway, so personal investment in that sense. And even looking at stuff like those of you that did the Boundless Summer Challenge, and hopefully you read the post about Joseph and just his winning essay and what went on there. Really excited about seeing that. I mean, you guys can't, I can't really describe what it was like to look at all those videos and just see young adults, you know, having memorized an entire chapter of Romans, Romans 12, and be able to recite it on camera. And it just reminds me of what it looks like for young adults to, you know, not have people looking down on us because we are young, those of you out there, but instead to take up the challenge and really move forward in your faith and worldview and spiritual disciplines and relationships and do what is right and what is honoring to the Lord. So we want to continue to do that. We're not the singles at the kids' table, everyone. We are a viable demographic. We've got stuff to do. We have a charge that's been given to us and a God that we have to honor. So just kind of a rallying cry for you all and for myself. I'm excited to be a part of this with you, and I hope that you'll continue to dialogue with me and be active on the blog and beyond, so that we can hear from you and that you'll write to us as well. And we will be seeing you around, I'm sure, and have, you know, a number of new guests and others here on the roundtable as well, and possibly on the blog. So we will go ahead and see. But we're entering the fall now, so a fresh start. We're going to go ahead and please stay in contact with us. So just a word from me to all of you all, and hopefully that makes sense and just conveys a little bit of my heart and where I am with this. In Sunday school, we're starting a study of the minor prophets, and our Sunday school teacher was sharing from Micah 5. And in Micah 5, verse 2, it's that famous passage that says, "But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times." And there were two things that I was reminded of in reading that yesterday. And that is, first of all, something big can come out of something small. And I know in the great scheme of things and all the mega ministries that are out there, maybe Boundless seems like it's kind of small. But it has had a huge impact on me personally. I know it's had a huge impact on many, many, many of you. You've written in with your stories, and they're all amazing in their own way. And so I think it's just, you know, we're small, but we're mighty, and I think we're going to grow, and I'm excited about that and the opportunities that are there. The other thing is, this prophecy was delivered, I believe, about 700 years before Christ actually came. And so it's just showing how God has his own timetable, his own timeline, and he knows what he's doing. And sometimes he will, here something was prophesied, and he kept his word in the midst of all that. And the deliverer, the redeemer, Jesus Christ, did come in his perfect time and in exactly the way that God had ordained. And so God knows what's up. As I always say here on the show, he knows our stories. And he definitely knows the story of Boundless and where we're going to go from here. And so I just continue to ask you to be in prayer for me and for the team that will come for this position that is to be filled. Just pray for focus as a whole, and just pray for all of us in the young adult Boundless community that will be faithful with what God has given us individually and as a ministry. All of you out there and what you're doing, because you're kind of the testimony of the testament, I guess, to what we do here at Boundless. So keep it up and stay in touch, and I will see you around. Thanks, everyone. If you gotta start somewhere, why not here? If you gotta start sometime, why not now? If we gotta start somewhere, I say here. If we gotta start sometime, I say now. Through the fog there is hope in the distance, from cathedrals to third world missions. Love will fall to the earth like a crashing wave. Tonight's the night for the sinners and the saints to wear.
you gotta start sometime, why not now? If we gotta start somewhere,
everyone. For this week's culture segment, I have got two guys with me in the studio. I have got Brad Lominick and Ken Coleman. Hi, guys.
Yes. Hello.
Yes, we're here. We're going to clap for ourselves.
Do you mind if we clap, Lisa?
We come with applause.
Yeah. That's awesome. And there are actually a few people sitting out there, but I think they're out there because it's part of their job.
They're not even listening. They're not listening at all. They've all got their back turned to us.
They listen to every third word. That's what they're doing. So
great looking teeth out there.
Yeah. Well, I probably, you know, I need to say who you guys are with, or I don't, because you guys are so amazing and popular.
Oh, boy.
It's just like the names themselves just speak.
No, nobody knows who we are. I assure you
that. Nobody knows who we are.
Okay. These guys are with Catalyst. Brad, you are actually the executive director of Catalyst?
Grand Poobah.
I'm the guy in charge, so whatever you want to call me, whether it's president or executive director. But I have the privilege of running everything related to Catalyst.
Yeah. That is awesome. And Ken, you are the host of the Catalyst podcast.
Yes. Now, the esteemed host. Wildly popular.
Is that a full-time job? Because I just do this on the side, and then I have all this other stuff I do.
It's slave labor, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but we're not going to talk about it. I promised Brad I wouldn't complain about it today.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I it's great fun. I work with Brad, I guess, as a consultant on a variety of issues around the conferences, and then I'm one of the MCs at the events. And I get the privilege of interviewing some great people through Catalyst, and then I get to have fun with this clown.
Yeah.
I mean, we just have lots of fun on that podcast.
And we're very very horizontal and flat in our structure of Catalyst. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people involved who would never show up with a title, but have tremendous amount of influence in terms of where we take Catalyst and speaker selection and programming and all that. And Ken's integrally involved in all the decisions we make in terms of where we're going with a lot of things. So
okay,
yeah,
that's cool. I actually went last year for my first time. Went to Atlanta, stayed with my both my sister and a friend of mine from college who actually attended the conference as well. So that was a lot of fun. And we had a booth. Boundless had a booth at Catalyst, which was great. I think people were just like, "Whoa! I didn't even know Focus on the Family knew about Catalyst." But we're like, "Hey, we do." So had a booth there, and we actually gave away our Guys and Girls Guides to Marrying Well. So, which flew off of our table, and I have actually told people that Esther was there with me. Esther has been on our podcast as well and is our millennial relations person here at Focus. I went hoarse explaining what Boundless is, so I'm kind of like, wow, no one knows who we are, so I guess we have our work cut out for us.
Hey, but we're going to have you on our podcast very soon.
Yes, we'll
return the favor. Out.
We have 17 listeners.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah, well,
that's including our mothers.
So. I was going to say, and you're two of them, so those
and
15,
and broad. Yeah.
We're looking
forward
to
we're growing fast.
Okay. Well, that's good. We it was very fun, actually, to have the booth and to talk to people, because it was very fascinating when we talk. One of Boundless's competencies is relationships and how to date biblically and move to marriage, hopefully in a timely manner and in an intentional manner. And not that I have done it yet, but that's a whole other story. But anyway, all that to say that it was a great opportunity for us to introduce what we have to say about about marriage and biblical marriage and whatever. So I remember talking to a few guys who were a little bit blazed away by the guy's guide that I gave them. And I pretty much, I think Esther wasn't prepared for me to just tell them to get out of their parents' basement and get it done.
Wow,
so,
I love it.
It's a good statement, anyway. Though.
Do you have one of those books for Brad before we leave?
we'll
Brad is
to...
one of the most eligible bachelors in evangelicalism.
Oh.
If you can say that.
In that case, everyone needs to go to the Catalyst website and look up your
bio. Do you have a picture
bio.
Up there?
He does, because I printed it off. It's
yeah.
here
he
with
does.
His bio.
Let me tell you, he has a fantastic looking head.
Okay, well.
So go take a look at Brad
okay,
at catalystspace.com.
Okay, but if we get you married off of this, then you have to have us regularly on the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. So there's some sort of royalty payback?
Oh, listen,
it's going to be David Letterman's
mom. We have a sponsorship package. If you get Brad married, you'll love it. It's fantastic.
Well, we will look forward to that. We'll be part of that for sure.
Yeah.
So tell us, okay, Catalyst kind of started around 1999. Is what I understand.
Yeah.
And you guys have ties to Andy Stanley and all of the stuff that he has going on. Mm-hmm. And I know he's a presence at the conference itself. Why did you feel that, and I know that the whole thrust of Catalyst is young leadership, specifically in the church and a little bit beyond, but why did you feel that young leadership in the church and in ministry had to be addressed in the first place?
Well, I mean, the origin of Catalyst was really built around this idea that we were working a lot with John Maxwell, who is a guru in leadership and at that time was doing conferences for thousands of pastors and church leaders. The challenge that we saw a little bit was that all the folks who were showing up were John's peers, and all the folks who were part of starting Catalyst were in their 20s. And so it was just the idea of, can we start something for our generation that actually speaks to us and it allows for us to, in some ways, aggregate our peers together and start to do things that are intentional and be in the church. And so that was really the genesis behind Catalyst starting and designed really for under 40 leaders,
mm-hmm.
Mainly because that's where all of us who were part of it and have been part of it were in our lives.
Right.
But really was built around still the idea of leadership. It wasn't a sense that we think leadership's different or we think we're trying to do leadership in a different way. It was more just saying, let's do something for our generation.
Uh-huh. So that actually, I was going to ask that then. What then is the distinction? I mean, how do you distinguish between what young leaders do versus what older leaders do so that we're not like ditching them or being like, hey, we're irrelevant?
Yeah, I don't think there's a distinct difference in terms of what, we're not trying to say that what we think is leadership is way better, or way more important, or is intrinsically more moral or relevant or connected to culture. It's mm-hmm. just more of saying, let's get our generation together and let's be inspired. Let's connect with each other. Let's create a sense of collaboration and let's do something. So we're not trying to say in any way that we have it figured out mm-hmm. in terms of what leadership looks like for the next generation. Mm-hmm. It's more of gathering leaders who are the next generation and then sending them out to really be calloused and whatever context they serve in.
Okay. So what would you say? I want to get into a little bit of the conference itself and what people can expect when they go to one. But first of all, let's just answer the question, what actually makes a good leader? If someone is, 21, 22, 23 years old, they just came out of their little Christian college experience, whatever, and they're like, I'm going to go and I'm going to be a leader. Mm. I mean, apart from going to a Catalyst conference, what do they do?
Take
How
that
do they
one,
know?
Ken.
Well,
I'm gonna yield my time to the great senator from the state of Virginia.
Thank you. That's a very loaded question, and there's about 8 billion answers to that. But I think at its core, what makes a good leader is somebody who has followers. You can't lead unless someone's following you. Other than you're out for a walk if you don't have anybody following you. So I think that at its core is a simplistic answer. But I think for a young 20-something, what makes a good leader again is just a very simple ability to unite and mobilize people to do something positive. I mean, again, this is a very stripped down answer. But I think for somebody, again, who's at this age who says, hey, I want to be a good leader. How do I become a good leader? What is a good leader? Then you really have to do two things. You have to observe and study. Observe is look at great leaders, people that are doing great things, no matter what channel you may be pursuing in life. Observe the great leaders and then go back in history and study the great leaders. And I think it's going to be interpreted a lot of different ways, but I think the core answer to what good leadership is there for all to find.
Yeah, and we've always...
That's all I got left. I mean, it was a miracle that I got through that. I don't know if that even made any sense.
No, it did. Wow. And we've always been totally in line with what John Maxwell has said, is leadership is influence. And it's similar to what Ken said. If you don't have anybody following you, then you're probably not leading at that point. I would give a different, little bit of a different angle in the sense of, are there differences in terms of how we lead today mm-hmm. versus how we led 20 years ago? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, today authenticity is key. Mm-hmm. Collaboration mm-hmm. is key. You know, there's been a lot of organizations that were built 20, 30 years ago that, you know, personality was the way that you led. Mm-hmm. You led by strength. You led by a sense of, you know, if you don't do this my way, it's the highway. And, you know, young leaders or 20-somethings, they want to feel like they're part of the vision. You know, mm-hmm. we've grown up in a society and a culture that says, I'm going to create something I want to do anyway. Mm-hmm. So if you want me on your team, then I'm going to do a project for you. I'm going to be a free agent. Mm-hmm. None of us, like our fathers or our parents who spent 40 years in a career, we're not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. So in terms of how we lead in organizations, completely different today than where it has been. But I still think the core elements of a leader are the same that they've been for
right.
you know, hundreds of years.
Well, and I think it's Maxwell who has that hierarchy of leadership. I think I remember him talking
yeah.
about that,
yeah.
where it's like some people lead because of title, and that's right, yeah. where, you know, they get followers. And then the highest level of leadership is that inspirational leader who
yeah.
just
it's,
by name and character and whatever has basically developed a following that, in fact, can inspire people to move beyond a personal
yeah,
situation.
Yeah, it's position versus mm-hmm. personhood.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom level is position, meaning that if you're the manager of the late night shift at McDonald's, people have to follow you because you're the manager of the late shift.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how you treat them
mm-hmm.
or what you do. And then personhood is that final level where people buy into you as
mm-hmm.
who you are. And to be honest with you, we saw that today with Jim Daly.
No question.
I think Jim Daly has truly achieved a level of personhood because we've met with many of the executives today. It's been a great privilege, great fun, but people have now bought into him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tremendous statement given the fact that there was a very strong and effective leader preceding him.
Yeah. And I'm sure y'all would say that about me as well if you knew me better.
I feel that. I've only known you for five minutes, but I'm
yeah.
starting to feel that.
Yeah.
I had to follow you into the room, Lisa, because this is your studio.
Well, that is true. I did follow Brad as well.
And yeah. That's good.
Nobody's following me.
Okay,
I'm
so one
concerned.
More distinction here, because we talked about leader. Now, is there then another distinction between what we would call godly leadership? Because we can have leaders who will inspire, and they can be Hitler, they can be Bin Laden, they can be Satan. So what makes a good godly leader in the sense of, I think originally we were talking about goodness, mm. you know, in that sense.
What makes a godly
wow.
leader?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it goes back to scripture. And, you know, what are the biblical characters, people? Obviously, Jesus is in the ultimate leader. So if we're following what the way that Jesus led, then to me, that's a home run in terms of being a godly leader, being a Christian leader. But, you know, a Christian leader in some ways, even today in our culture, has such different context in terms of how we even look at that. You know, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so many of our Christian leaders who we've looked up to the last 30 or 40 years have let us down. And mm-hmm. that's just being a person, you know? So I think it does go back to the person of Jesus. I mean, that's what we would always say is, let's look at the Jesus in scripture and model what he did and what and how he led.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tough questions from Lisa.
Yeah, I'm glad you
very tough questions.
One.
I'm glad you submitted
Pass.
A bunch because I so far haven't used any of them, but I will get to a couple of them. That's good.
Well,
but
no
there was one,
there.
It was just like number 12, you just left blank. So that's kind of
I feel like I'm on the hot seat here.
That's
I'm
where leader. I took some license.
Yeah.
Right
leadership
there.
Hot seat with Lisa.
Like, whoa.
Oh, I like that. Leadership hot seat with Lisa.
Anyhow. Okay, so tell us about the conference because it is a Leviathan among conferences today, I would say.
What is that? What does that mean?
In the
I don't know what Leviathan means.
It's big.
Can I get some help from behind the glass?
Intern.
I don't
need
know.
Interns on this.
Anyway, I went there. I was amazed at how many people attend. I was amazed at how wonderfully produced it was. I was amazed at how, you know, I mean, I did my time at Willow Creek. You know, I've been in big churches. Now I'm not. I'm a little smaller one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've seen all the AV prowess and stuff. What can people, I mean, what is your goal? When people go to Catalyst and they sign up a weekend of their life to do this thing, what are you hoping to accomplish in them and ultimately in the church?
Another loaded question.
Would you like
from
to
Lisa.
Pass that one?
No, I mean, let's tag team. I think.
Okay, tag me when you're ready.
Both. Let's talk about the attendee first.
Yeah.
We feel like that our events and our experiences are in many ways a way to inspire, because inspiration is still critical
mm-hmm.
for any leader or for any person. people want to be inspired. They want to feel like there's a sense of hope. So what we always feel like we've got to do is bring a sense of hope. Obviously, we want to give them content that is going to help them and equip them as a leader. But there's other things that happen indirectly. The community side of that, when you get 13,000 leaders together like we do in Atlanta, there's something that God does with that kind of energy mm-hmm. that we can't explain. Mm-hmm. And we can plan for it. We can produce it. But at the end of the day, when you see that many of your peers together and you go, wow, like we can make a difference. This group right here can make a difference in our world. Then people get inspired. And so there's so many things that happen because of collaboration and connections and the sense of community that we don't really control. That, you know, and obviously we want to put on a great event. We want to create a great experience from a production standpoint, because for us, we feel like that our standard is so high because God has called us to a standard of excellence that anything we do, we always want to put that stamp on it that says, you know what, Catalyst is the best leadership experience in the world. And not just in the church world or not just in the Christian conference world, but in the world, because we feel like God has called us to that kind of standard. Mm-hmm. And so if that actually inspires leaders to go back in their communities and say, let's have that same level of excellence, and they can do that, you know. So those are some things that we always hope for that'll happen. You know, and we have a very specific, we call them the elements of a Catalyst leader that we always address in terms of the program, the content, the speakers that show up. And those are things that have been our sort of guiding light in terms of the way that we select speakers and look at the content grid for 2 days. And we, you know, those are on our website. And we do everything sort of through that grid, through that filter.
Yeah. I mean, I was super impressed with the way you guys use the power of story, for lack of a better way of saying it, with last year when I was out manning my booth and waiting for you, Ken, to come and check on me, and you didn't.
Yes, that's unfortunate.
I missed that whole compassion deal.
Why I wasn't able to come see you. I was actually
on the stage.
I know, but
stage,
you didn't even give me a rain check. You didn't even come out after
that's terrible. We do have DVDs with us. So.
Okay, that is good. Because I have yet to even see who this dude is. I mean, I've heard.
Really?
I heard through Esther, because Esther saw him, but I didn't.
YouTube.
So,
YouTube.
Yeah.
It's a big hit on YouTube as
well.
I'm guaranteed to make you cry.
Okay, I was there for the guy who jumped off into the pool.
Oh, well, that was memorable as well.
Yeah.
And that did change my life. And I was glad to be there for that. But to see really how a guy who, when he was a 20-something or 20, I guess, decided to take on a compassion child and recognize that he could make a difference in that way, and then to see the impact about 20-ish years later, I think, was a marvelous way of accomplishing that. What kind of feedback have you guys gotten from that? I mean, I'm sure Compassion has gotten feedback, and hello, they're our neighbor here. So,
well, you know,
we love them. But
yeah, great folks over there, and they are a big partner with us, and they came up with the idea to unite Jimmy with his sponsor Mark, and technically speaking, it was the largest 1 day total sponsorships that Compassion has ever had in its history. So it was a real yay God moment. From that standpoint, we had about 1,100 packets in the room that day, or 1,200 packets, and we had almost 1,100 passed out. It was extraordinary. It's been over 90% people, you know, coming back. And you know, it's one of those things that I get asked about all the time. I was recently here with the Compassion folks, and they were introducing me the entire day as, this is the guy that was with Jimmy on stage. And
the guy that couldn't hold it together.
Yeah, and I was terribly humbled by it, because we knew it was going to be a powerful moment, and we pray over the entire event. But we had no idea that it was going to happen like that. We had no idea that Jimmy was going to act the way he did. And I remember at some point having an out-of-body experience, because now I'm going from trying to manage the situation, you get this intensely in private moment in front of 13,000 people, and this guy's sobbing and his sponsor is sobbing. And, I looked around the room, and you know, it's very dark in that room, and I could see about three rows out all the way around. It's a center stage, and everyone was weeping. And it was the type of moment where it was very quiet, and I'm standing off to the side to get out of the way, and I could hear the sobs and the snot and everything. And it was just, holy cow. I mean, it was like, so then I started getting verklempt, and that was tough. And so I'm thinking, oh,
good word.
I'm thinking, God, just get me through this thing. Because it was just emotional for everybody. And we got through it, and God did an amazing thing. And it was just one of the privileges of my life to be standing there and witness God come down. Yeah. As I've never seen that happen before, because I'm, you know, I'm not a pastor. I've never been on stage when the work of the Spirit has come in. And I don't know how else to describe it, Brad. It just was one of those things where we had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And we basically planned and said, let's try to create a moment here that is going to be memorable. Yeah. And as Ken said, everybody was crying, including all of us and all of our team. And it is perhaps one of the most memorable moments in the history of Catalyst. And we've done a lot of things that have been memorable. I mean, we've broken lots of world records, and we've had Professor Splash, and you know, we've thrown footballs at Tony Dungy, and I mean, we try to create all these great moments that people can walk home and go, "Wow, remember that." Mm-hmm. But by far the most impactful, memorable moment would be bringing Jimmy and his sponsor back together.
And I have to mention this. I have to mention this because we're going with Compassion. They're taking a camera crew, and I'm getting to go with Jimmy, and we're going to go to Haiti. And for those of you who've seen the video, in that moment before we reunited Jimmy with his sponsor or united him with him for the first time, Jimmy talked about the fact that Mark stepped up in the gap for him when he was four. Mm-hmm. And he has since sponsored a four-year-old girl in Haiti. So we're like, you can't follow up that moment, right? God just did something miraculous, and it was pretty amazing. So for those of you who may not get to come to the conference, or if you come this year, we are taking a camera crew, and Jimmy and I are going to Haiti for a couple days. We're going to introduce Jimmy to the little girl that he's been sponsoring. She did survive the earthquake. And so, you know, it's just God's kind of telling a story there, and we're so thrilled to work with Compassion. They are truly amazing, and we've seen literally thousands of kids' lives change over the last 3 or 4 years.
That's cool. Okay, one more toughish question, and then I'll
Oh, I like the tough ones.
A couple softballs. How?
You should,
okay,
you should have your own like show.
Podcast.
Yeah,
I think she kind of does. We're on it. Did anybody give Brad production notes?
Yeah,
this is embarrassing.
Sorry,
I apologize, folks.
That's okay. They haven't let me host the Focus Daily broadcast yet.
Well, you
though.
Should. I'm gonna slip. Ken and I are both gonna endorse you.
You know, we spent the whole day with Jim. We got major influence now.
They have
so
my.
I'll slip
they have my. My concern with my affinity for skulls has been a sticking point.
We're not gonna talk about that.
Well, I was a little concerned about it as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, here's my question. How you have got thousands of people that come to this conference. You've got a ton of different speakers from all different churches, from all different backgrounds, all kinds of stuff. You've got a bunch of different programs and resources and tactics and new ideas. How, in the midst of all of that, do you preserve scriptural orthodoxy? How do you land on the same page when it comes to that?
Pass.
Whoa. Someone needs to step up and lead.
Well,
Yeah, here's what we would say, because we get this question quite often in terms of where do we land from a foundational perspective.
Okay.
And there's really two things that we land on. One would be the Nicene Creed, which is very foundational for any organization that's not connected to a denomination or to some sort of formal relationship with you know, a historical body. The other thing that we would adhere to is the Lausanne Covenant. And those two, for us, theologically, are foundational. Now, from the standpoint of how do we stay close to Scripture, that's something that we're always wrestling with in terms of, you know, the essentials for us are the essentials. And we're never going to get away from the essentials. But there's a lot of things that we feel like are non-essential. And that's why we have over 65, 70 different denominations that are part of Catalyst. And that's why we have speakers from completely different backgrounds who will show up at Catalyst and actually speak on the same stage, because they feel like the Catalyst is a place that unites instead of divides. And we feel like that's our role. So we're never going to get away from Scripture. And that's a part of who we are. But at the same time, we're about leadership. And leadership is who we are. It's what we talk about. It's really what we're driven towards. So in many ways, we just, it's not that we dismiss a lot of the things that we could get wrapped up in, but we feel like that in some ways that's not necessarily our role. Now, there's a lot of leaders who show up at our events, and they're probably wrestling with things in their own life that they're thinking about or wondering about. But we always have an assumption that those who attend Catalyst are mature enough to hear from different perspectives. And again, you know, the idea is that when you hear different perspectives, you're able to take that and look at it through the lens of your own walk with Christ and say, what do I think about that? And wrestle with it. And that's something we've, in the Christian community, I think we've always had a hard time with, is we want to be spoon-fed. We want somebody to say, this is how it is, and if you don't believe this way, then you probably are not believing correctly. We would take the approach of, we're going to give you a lot of content and a lot of perspectives that aren't outside of the channel or the river that we're running in, but might push you a little bit out of your comfort zone, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Take that and deal with it on your, you know, on your own time.
Okay. So
it was well done. Well done.
Okay.
I have nothing to add.
Okay.
All right.
So in light of that, you guys have a lot of speakers who come to Catalyst to do, obviously, keynoters as well as workshops and stuff like that. Everyone from Andy Stanley, we talked about him, Francis Chan, a lot of the others. Many of these guys and women have written books and are out there. They have their own ministries. But we have learned from them. Many of us have our favorites. But who do you guys find personally challenging and inspiring, and for what reason? Like, who do you admire, knowing them personally, probably many of these folks, and what is being done out there really among these leaders of leaders to model leadership the way we see it should be done?
It's a good question.
That is a good question.
And Ken, certainly you can address this one. You've probably interviewed many of them on your own podcast.
Yeah. It's a different answer if I said who my favorite interview versus who inspires me the most, so I'll stick to your question.
Okay.
I've told Brad forever, I don't think it's changed for me. He knows what I'm going to say. Of all the speakers that have come across the Catalyst stage, the one that speaks to me the most and moves me the most is Louis Giglio. Mm-hmm. Now, that's very personal, as everybody. It's like flavors of ice cream. But the reason I appreciate Louis so much is because he speaks with a passion and a flair. And I just happen to like the way he communicates. So that's point number one with him. But, you know, Louis is also a very interesting leader. You know, passion is a very global movement, and God's all over it. And I'm sure your audience is very familiar with passion. But what people don't realize about Louis is he's a leader. He doesn't lead institutionally. He really leads with his gut after really, really seeking God. But the thing that I like about Louis the most, and this is that I am inspired by people who trust God. And, you know, we have so many Christians that live their whole life and they were just waiting on God to tap them on the shoulder and say, here's what you're supposed to do. And I think God doesn't work that way. And I think Louis steps out into space. I've seen him take some huge leaps of faith with that organization that could have brought it down. And only through God's complete providence and working has it flourished the way it has. And I think Louis is very strategic to take risks, because everything he's touched with his music label and with the conferences, it's all successful by human numbers. Mm-hmm. And he has not over-leveraged it. He's taken time off from the conference. The global tour was a humongous risk and remains a humongous risk. And so that's why Louis inspires me the most. I like the way he leads. He's the real deal. And in my opinion, the best communicator in America.
Okay.
And that's sacrilege in Andy Stanley country, but they're actually best friends. But Louis's just a great communicator.
Awesome.
It's hard for me to say. I mean, I'm because...
They're like his children.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, all of the folks that we would say or have spoken or been part of Catalyst at some point all bring such unique and great things to the table. I would say probably that the two, I mean, Andy for me, just in terms of his involvement with Catalyst over the last several years, has, in terms of leadership, mm-hmm. Pure just leadership content, I think he is, he's the person I listen to. I download all of his podcasts that he does and really try to learn from him. Not that I don't learn from others, but I learn most from Andy in terms of just the way he leads. And then there's a lot of sages and mentors that I feel like are really important for me personally. Guys like Chuck Swindoll and guys like John Perkins, who I've never even met, but what John Perkins has done, they call him Grandpa John, what he's done in terms of just the conversation over the course of his life of really trying to change the course of racial relations in America. And guys like John Stott. And there's other sages out there who, you know, we've had a lot of them at Catalyst. Every year we always give an award, the Lifetime Achievement Award. And this year at our West Coast event, we gave it to Dallas Willard, another one who I would say, man, he's enriched so many of us who are young leaders with a perspective that's appropriate. So the sages for me are the ones who I tend to be drawn to the most, mm-hmm. most of the time. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
That was more than one.
That's okay. We'll let it slide.
Okay. All right.
Okay. You guys have to dash, so we're going to let you go. I want you to throw out the deets, just how people can find out more about Catalyst and or attend the conferences
here. I like
it.
Well, I'm gonna talk about Ken's Twitter first. At the Ken Coleman.
Okay. The Ken Coleman.
At the Ken Coleman.
Ken
yeah,
Coleman.
The Ken Coleman. Follow. Ken Coleman was taken.
Okay.
Yeah, all the Ken Colemans were taken. I didn't want to be Ken Coleman 73, right?
Right.
So I came up with the Ken Coleman. It's not a statement of my arrogance.
Yeah. And my Twitter is at Brad Lominick. That's LOMENICK.
Can't believe you're doing this. It's so naked. It's just a just complete self.
At least I asked for us to give ways for people to connect with
to
us.
To come to the conference.
Oh, sorry.
To connect. Well, we need some shout outs for any personal connections. Too,
yeah, so. CatalystConference.com is our event website. Mm-hmm. So right now, if you go to CatalystConference.com, you'll see all the information for the October event.
Mm, you can get an early bird special, too.
Yes. Catalyst Space, which is just Catalyst and then the word space, SPACE.com, is sort of the home base for all things Catalyst. And we've got a lot of articles on there. We've got podcasts. We've got different things that people can engage in through that way. And then if people want to register for the event, 888-334-6569 is the number they can call. You can talk to one of our concierges.
Oh, well.
Yeah, we have the Catalyst Concierge Service. Which
it's high class.
It is. And they're there to, you know, basically help people find hotel rooms and get signed up as a group and those kind of things.
Okay.
Ken makes fun of me every time that we talk about these kind of items on our podcast. He tends to find ways to make fun of it.
Well, Lisa,
he also made
I am.
Fun of his Gaither connection. That is tragic.
Oh, yeah, which Lisa and I both like the Gaither.
I really stepped in it.
Which like
I,
completely legitimized you guys. So, yeah,
because
you
both are big
what's
fans.
What's the tenor guy that always hits the high note?
Well, David he's no Phelps. Longer with them.
Thank you.
No, he's
David?
Back with them now.
He's back.
When he hits those
he's
high
back.
Notes, it's
he's
like
unbelievable.
Yeah. And Guy Penrod with his bolo tie.
The problem is, Lisa, I am normally in your seat hosting the Catalyst podcast, and then Brad makes me do these ridiculous announcements about early birds and super early birds, and nobody cares.
Oh.
That's really not true. We sell out every year, so I guess
I think they do
matters.
Care, but sometimes you like to just
it's a
make
shtick.
Light of it.
No, it is a shtick. Do you ever get emails from listeners who took something you said sarcastically and they thought you were serious? Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it happens to me all the time.
Believe it or not, I've actually, in the past few weeks, have been called racist, a man-hater, and something else. I forget what.
Now, see, now I'm only getting grief from youth pastors because I'm always teasing youth pastors.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Teasing, just teasing, you know, but I've never been called a man-hater or racist.
Oh, well, see, my...
I got to start subscribing to this.
My moniker is don't mess with Lisa A because she don't play, so I take a lot of it as far as that goes.
Nice.
So that's just how it goes down. But, okay, Brad Lominick and Ken Coleman, you guys, Catalyst, we will look forward to seeing you this year. If we decide to get a booth, we'll just keep
it open.
We'll see what happens.
You know what? I can't be in two places at once, Lisa.
Maybe,
it's just impossible.
Maybe. I don't know, but I'm just saying we need a little bit more, and we will look forward to seeing Jim Daly on your speaker's docket sometime in the very near future. You heard it here first, folks, and we will go.
Wow.
Go
Lisa's,
with that.
Lisa's
so.
Hey,
out
let
there.
Me say this.
Stepping out
if
there.
You want to hear my exclusive interview with Jim Daly, you can go to the old Catalyst podcast on iTunes. It's
right.
It is
stuff.
There, folks. Yeah. It's a good one. So we love Jim Daly. So.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for
thank
having
you guys
us.
Very much for being here.
Yes.
Awesome.
You turned away when I looked you in the eye and hesitated when I asked if you were all right. Seems like you're fighting for your life, but why? Oh, why? Wide awake in the middle of your nightmare. You saw it coming, but it hit you out of nowhere. There's always scars when you fall that far. We lose our way, we get back up again. It's never too late to get back up again. And one day, you gon' shine again. You may be knocked down, but not out forever. We lose our way, we get back up again. So get up, you gon' shine again. It's never too late to get back up again. You may be knocked down, but not out forever.
Well, opening up this week's Inbox, I am in the studio with Joanne Condi. Joanne is a member of our counseling team here at Focus. Joanne, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Good to be here.
It's neat to have Joanne here for this question, a listener question. It's a really interesting one. You know, I kind of prepped you all on it a little bit before the show began. So just to kind of give you a taste of what we were going to be looking at. But Joanne is actually not only a counselor, but she also has a nursing background. So she's going to be very equipped to answer this question. So I will read it, and here we go. This listener says, my boyfriend and I are planning on getting married in a year. We both agree we want children and more than just a few. The only place we differ is that he wants biological children and I want to adopt. He doesn't mind adoption, he just wants his own children first. The only problem is, I faint at the sight of needles and I am not exaggerating. I can't watch the TV show House, which was the cause of my last fainting spell. He's aware of this, but we still don't know if there's an answer for us. I won't mind the getting or being pregnant, but I'm afraid I'd rather die than give birth. What do I do? I don't want him to break up with me over this.
Gosh, this is such a great question. And I guess if you were sitting here with me, one of the first things I would ask is, is this a deal breaker for you? If it's a deal breaker of whether or not you get married, that certainly takes on a much bigger scope than this being something that would you would try to work through. And I also want to say my heart just goes out to you. I don't like needles either, frankly, and I don't think anybody does. But as a nurse, we understand that there are a lot of people. You're not alone with this issue of needles. But my counselor hat would also say to you that there is just a great way for you to work through this, because sometimes anxieties over needles, if that doesn't get resolved, then it expands and it becomes anxiety about other things. And I've actually had clients started working where you did, and eventually they even couldn't drive down the street where the local clinic was, and then it became they couldn't even drive past a hospital. Now, I'm not saying this to frighten you, but what I'm saying is, here's the good news. You can work through this issue, and you'd be amazed if you sat down with a Christian counselor. I'm not talking about many months or years. I'm talking about sometimes in a very short few sessions that you can learn to face this issue. And it's going to reduce your anxiety in a way that you can't even imagine. You'll have this elephant lifted off your shoulder when you realize that you can actually face that fear, work through it, not be afraid of watching House or some other program. And then once you have worked through this and the fears that you have get put into a doable, manageable kind of framework, then you and your boyfriend can sit down and have a decision about this, whether it's biological children or adopted children, and you can have this informed place, this relaxed place that will be amazing, because then now you can make a decision on it. And I think the two of you actually can partner on this and work this problem out.
That's good. And it's good to hear you say, I think, Joanne, that this problem is not insurmountable, because I think a lot of people would say, well, I can't deal with needles. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. That's just it. Mm-hmm. How you did mention the boyfriend. Now, as they move toward marriage, how can he support her in this? Because if he's really if they're at odds on this and he says, look, you know, I really want to have kids, so figure this out. And, you know, how can he be a support?
Well, Lisa, I'm glad you brought that up, because if they're talking about marriage, he's going to be marrying a woman who's going to have this kind of fear, and she's going to be prone to other kinds of anxiety. So if he could literally be there at the counseling session, that counselor can help him to say, these are the things you may think are helpful, but actually add to the problem. And here's things not to do. And so it can actually draw them closer.
That's true, yeah. And not to take adoption off the table entirely. It looks like they're both open to it, and that's a great option as well.
Yes.
And obviously here at Focus, we're very passionate about adoption with our Wait No More initiative. So definitely keep that on the table. But if, as you said, anxiety and fear, you know, we don't want that to be a part of her life, and neither does the Lord.
Right. And we don't want this decision to be fear-driven. And the scripture actually says, where does all fear come from? And that's not from God. So I say that not to condemn or judge you, but just to say, isn't it good news that God has a way through that? And he tells us not to be fearful. And so therefore he can help us. And there are people that can help you. So this is really not an issue in your life.
Well, that's great. Joanne, thanks so much for weighing in on this.
Oh,
I think it'll be super helpful for her, and probably a huge comfort, as well as other people who no doubt, you know, all of us have struggled with certain insecurities and fears on different levels. And so I think it's a good reminder to go to the Lord with them and recognize that there are ways to work through them. So, well, thanks so much. That is it for this week's show, everyone. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org with your questions, and we will certainly do our best to address them. Obviously, Joanne's a great example. We have a great arsenal of experts here at Focus on the Family and beyond that we can call on to tackle these tough questions. So Listen in and benefit from these answers as well as others. Write into us again. And until then, we'll see you on next week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.